Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that explores the people, the stories, and events of Central Ames, Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Greta Anderson, and I'm joined by co-host Tom Beal. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Greta.
It's a beautiful one out there today.
Well, considering last night was a dark and stormy night, as Bulwer Lytton would have written, this is a pleasant morning.
We're washed clean. Later in the hour, we will be talking about a new program in Ames, spearheaded by the United Way, that promises to serve 200 at-risk children during the summer months and dozens more in Nevada. So it's an exciting new program, and we'll be exploring that. But I thought we'd talk politics for the first few minutes of the hour today. Tom, I know you follow politics closely, and I could benefit from your expertise in thinking about the primary elections that were held yesterday.
Well, as with many primaries, the voter turnout was rather low, and I think it's because people expect a little dynamic action. We really only had a couple of contested races in our area, and while it did turn out some passionate supporters for those candidates, the total turnout for our county and for our general area here was fairly low. There are about 83,000 registered voters. Now, that number is a little high because it includes people who are not off the list for some reason. Maybe they've passed away and were just not dropped from the list. But of that number, only 4,800 people voted. Now, as of 8 o'clock last night, and the polls were open for another hour, but with the rain and everything, I think those people who hadn't already voted might not have gotten up and made their effort. But it's such a patriotic responsibility. Even for a primary, you'd like to think people would go ahead and cast their ballots for candidates, even if there weren't any contested races. We did have two that I think generated the most interest, and that is for Senate District 23, where an incumbent after many years was challenged by another Democrat, a woman. And so we had an interesting situation where the people who feel there should be more gender balance in the legislature were eager to see a change there, even though many felt that the incumbent, Herman Kornbeck, had done a pretty good job. So there was that race. And then the second race of interest, I think, was the Republican campaign for nomination for the county attorney. Now, we have an incumbent Democrat county attorney, Stephen Holmes, who has been in office for quite a while. And so we had two Republicans seeking his position, and we had all these candidates on KHOI.
That's
and
right.
I hope our listeners had a chance to listen and learn more about their positions. But anyway, I stayed up late last night waiting for the final returns to come in, and for reasons only known to God, three precincts out of 24 in the Senate race still hadn't reported in. As of 11 o'clock last night, that's 2 hours after the polls closed, and we're talking about maybe 150 votes to count. And so where was the problem? And I have to tell you, Greta, this story. When I was living in Wisconsin, I was a reporter for a radio station in Madison, and I covered the elections. And so I, along with a group of reporters, went over to the Dane County Courthouse to get the latest results, and we stayed. And the results were coming in really fast. This was not a heavy computer age yet. They were still counting by hand and calling in the results. Anyway, we get to the end, and we're still waiting for one last precinct to come in. Where was this precinct? We waited and waited. The candidates were eager to find out. It wouldn't necessarily have changed results, but we wanted a complete story, right? 2 hours later, finally, the results came in, and we learned what had happened. The people at the polling station decided to go to dinner before they counted the ballots and called them in. So we waited patiently. Well, I don't know what happened here where three precincts out of 24 didn't count, but it didn't make any difference because Herman Kornbeck did get 73% of the vote at that time, and his challenger got 23%. It was an interesting race. I know that, you know, when candidates and their supporters get engage in a campaign, they get rather passionate about it.
We should mention that the name of the challenger is Cindy Passion.
Yes, pardon me. I meant to say that.
Not spelled like Passion, but...
Yeah, P-A-S-C-H-E-N.
Right.
I will say that the race got a little bit bitter close to the election day. There was a front page story in the Tribune in which Cindy Passion made some critical remarks about Herman Kornback, and I think for some of the party faithful that irritated them.
Yeah, and I know that there was an ad put out by Kornback full of the names listed in very small print of his supporters. That was also published on Sunday in the Tribune, and there was some controversy about that ad. One of the problems was there was no this ad was paid for by such and such. There was no tag on there to say who had paid for it, and then I think some of the names were under dispute.
Having talked with Senator Kornback, I know that he's pretty much of a stickler about not putting names in an ad that weren't already approved by the people, because, you know, it does bounce back. If you run an ad and you name somebody and they didn't give their permission, you hear about it and it really undermines your campaign. So I think he tried hard to avoid that. And whether that's a satisfactory explanation to everybody, I don't know. I do think that overall the voters apparently did feel, the Democratic voters did feel that Herman Kornback had done a good job. He got 72.5% of the vote as of about 11:30, whenever the final returns came in, 1,577 votes. And Cindy Passion got 27.5% of the votes, or 597.
Do you think that those votes were votes for Cindy or against Herman, that 27%?
Well, I think there's probably a little both. I would say that I know that there was a strong feeling among some folks in the county that they wanted more women in the legislature. And they know that sometimes you have to displace an incumbent male in order to do that. I think it was interesting on the statewide level how the Republicans fared. Now, this is a case where the Republicans have fielded two women. Two women have survived the primary. And so in some ways, they're going to make, from the gender standpoint, they're going to make a strong race. One, the challenger to Congressman Lobsack's seat is a woman, Mariette Miller Meeks, and she'll be the Republican challenger for his seat. And, of course, Joni Ernst is going to be the challenger to Bruce Braley. And so we'll see how that goes. Now, she came out of nowhere. She had a big field. She had a defeat of men, who many of whom were maybe better known than she. But she had a spectacular ad that got national attention. And I think name recognition is a big part of it. And it was a tough ad, you might say a red meat ad, where she really, I think, fired up the Republican base, certainly the conservative base, and she did very well.
And appealed to the rural voters.
Of course, because she stressed her ag background. This is a woman who combines a lot of things. She's got an ag background. She's a lieutenant colonel, I think, in the National Guard. She's very articulate.
Yes. She will be a formidable opponent and kind of a Sarah Palin-type candidate.
Sarah Palin endorsed her.
Yes. That will garner a lot of attention and provide really an interesting race to watch.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, Tom Harkin, you know, has quite a Story County connection. And so whenever he ran for reelection, initially for the Congress, or for the House of Representatives, then later for Senate, he always did much of his campaigning in Central Iowa, where he felt big support. And he did get good support. Well, Bruce Braley, who is living in eastern Iowa, nevertheless attended ISU. I think he may have met his wife here, but I can't remember for sure. But he has ties to Central Iowa, and so I know Democrats feel comfortable with him and they like him. He didn't have an opponent, a Democratic challenger, so he was running. He didn't have a chance really to stress his positions on issues and so on. He did make appearances. But, you know, in many ways, what you're doing is conserving your money, because the real challenge comes in the general election, and he's going to have a really tough opponent. I wanted to mention briefly the county attorney race.
Okay.
We had the two candidates in, and I think we were both impressed with them. One, Stephen Howell, had run before, and he nearly won. I mean, he was a few hundred votes short, but not by much. And his challenger was a younger man, Tyler Eason, who I think he's 30, very energetic, very articulate.
And he had worked in the Story County Attorney's
Office.
Whereas
Stephen Holmes didn't have prosecutorial experience, whereas Tyler Eason did. But I think the voters, the Republican voters, were familiar with Stephen Howell. He had run before. I think they were confident that he could handle the job if he got elected. And so they overwhelmingly supported him. 60.9% of the voters voted for him. Now, again, this might be familiarity, because Republican voters were familiar with him. I think they felt comfortable with him. He speaks well. He exudes confidence. I think we would agree. And Tyler Eason, energetic, dynamic. I think we might see more of him. The only thing is, he felt uniquely qualified for this job. I don't know how he will do if he runs for something else, but I think we're going to see more of him.
Okay. And we will be covering those races, of course, as November comes closer.
I think it might be interesting, too, to mention that Governor Branstad the Republicans love him, and a lot of independents as well. And he got 83% of the vote against his challenger, Tom Hostling. And he's going to be the guy.
Right. Okay. And he'll be facing Jack Hatch.
Yes, he will.
The Democratic challenger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that wraps up our election coverage, our primary coverage. Tom, there was an article a couple of weeks ago in the Ames Tribune about a summer learning program that took place last year in Nevada and now is coming to Ames. Ames Community School typically offers summer school for its at-risk children or kids that need to catch up a little bit with academics. Well, this year the program has, in the words of a friend of mine, has mushroomed into something much bigger, more exciting, and ambitious than anything that the words summer school imply. It turns out that 70% or more of the kids who need to go to summer school are also on free and reduced lunch. So United Way of Story County has spearheaded a program with numerous partners to offer breakfast before the summer school portion, lunch after it, and then on top of that, a two-hour enrichment program where the at-risk kids will get some of the kind of holistic, experiential learning in science and technology that sometimes don't come their way because they're stuck in remedial classes. All of that is taking place at the middle school campus in Ames Middle School. In addition, the United Way is promoting a Reading Buddies program that will take place at various sites throughout the community. So I talked to Jean Cressy. She is the director of United Way of Story County in our studio a few days ago, and we'll be listening to that interview in a moment. Later, we're going to be joined by a couple of people who are deeply involved in the programming and will help explain it. I asked Jean, basically, how did this mushrooming occur? How did the program grow from a summer school feeding program to enrichment, reading buddies, et cetera. And she started her story with Raising Readers of Story County. And I thought that was quite interesting. This organization it's easy to get behind, and it has really gained a lot of power in our community in making sure that the basic tool of literacy gets into the hands of everyone and using that to break the cycle of poverty. So let's listen now to Jean Cressy, Director of United Way of Story County.
What happened a few years ago, Raising Readers of Story County invited some individuals to sit down from the community and talk about what Ames would look like if we were a city of readers. From that, United Way got involved and we created Ames Reads, which is part of the grade level reading campaign. It's a national movement through the Annie E. Casey Foundation. And from that, we've started really looking at grade level reading, and that's part of why we are doing the enrichment program. The other side of the coin is the hunger. We started a hunger collaboration in 2011 and have really been looking at the pockets of poverty in our county as well as in the Ames community. And that hunger collaboration identified only one summer food program that was happening in the whole county, and that's at the Boys and Girls Club. They're feeding during the summer anywhere between 100 and 130 children a day for that noon meal. And for many of those kids, that might be the only nutritious meal they get during the day. So last year, flipping back the calendar, last year we worked with the community in Nevada and piloted a summer food and enrichment program there. We had 16 days of programming. We served lunch and a snack through the summer food service program through the Iowa Department of Education. So I would say we got our feet wet at that point. It was remarkable turnout. We fed over 170 kids throughout the 16 days that we had the program, and we had about 108 volunteers help us with that program. Definitely was a community event. So we decided that we knew what we were doing. Maybe we should do that here in Ames, because of the population, only having one summer food program really isn't making as big of an impact as we'd like. So we partnered with the Ames Community Schools, Ames Public Library, Raising Readers of Story County, and we brought together a group of individuals last fall to start talking about what would a summer food and enrichment program look like. Last year, the summer academic program that the district had was 3 weeks long, and so we talked about what really makes an impact on children and the summer learning loss, and research, best practices and research tells us that a program in the summer needs to be 6 weeks or longer. So during the year, we've been talking with the school district about that, and so that's where we landed on the 6 weeks program. Fortunately, we have lots of VISTA and AmeriCorps members that are helping us get the planning down.
How did you arrive at so many VISTA volunteers? I went over to United Way the other day, and there was a whole room full of them.
Well, we've, they talk about good fortune. Because of our involvement with the grade level reading campaign and our relationship as a member organization to United Way Worldwide, United Way Worldwide let us know last fall that if we wanted to apply for VISTA positions through them, we could do that. So we did. And so we started in February with Judy Dahlke and Leslie Kohlhaus. They started in February, and Judy, of course, is a Raising Readers volunteer, so that connection was really good for her. And then Leslie had been an intern for us last fall for another program. So they started, and then the Volunteer Center of Story County, which is another partner for this organization, had the opportunity to have two Points of Light VISTA workers, and decided that it was something that they wanted to do on behalf of the Summer Food and Enrichment Program. So we received two more VISTAs, and then we have a program called the Iowa Reading Corps, which is a pilot this year with AmeriCorps members, and we weren't able to fill all the slots in the schools, and so we were able to convert one of our slots to two summer AmeriCorps members. So that brings us six in total. And then because we have an Iowa Reading Corps member at Sawyer Elementary, she will be joining the ranks this summer and helping with the program. But we still need volunteers.
That's what I've heard.
We still need volunteers. We've had a lot of people say that this is a great opportunity. You don't have to be an educator to volunteer. You don't have to be a cook to volunteer. You just have to have some time and the heart to help kids. And we have lots of opportunities for volunteers. You can do it one day for an hour. You can do it every Monday at the same time. You could do a whole chunk of a week. We had in Nevada one volunteer that actually volunteered the entire summer. He was there every day, and it was wonderful. So there's lots of opportunities.
Yeah, I'm sure that was really rewarding for him. I mean, to when you're only in contact with a kid, you know, once a week or something like that through Sunday school, you develop a certain kind of bond. But when you have that daily exposure and can have that interaction, you know, every single day, you really form a bond with the kid. And that's somebody who, when that child graduates from high school, you'll probably be going to their high school graduation party because you know that
child,
that person.
Right. And he had he brought lots of puzzles and games and just some different things that the kids were able to do right after lunch before the enrichment program started. And he interacted with those kids on a daily basis. They loved having him there. There will be about 200 kids that actually participate in breakfast and lunch, and then 150 of those 200 children will stay for the enrichment activities in the afternoon. We couldn't do the food program without Youth and Shelter Services being the sponsor. They were our sponsor last year for the food component in Nevada, so they knew what they were getting into, but this is definitely a much larger undertaking in Ames this year than what we did in Nevada last year.
And that funding stream comes from the federal government, is that correct?
That's correct. The Summer Food Services Program is through the USDA, and it comes to our state through the Iowa Department of Education, and then we, meaning Youth and Shelter Services, has the contract with Iowa Department of Education to provide the summer food service program. It's the same thing that you would do through the school year for free and reduced lunch program, but on a different scale and different rules and regulations.
The enrichment program, let's talk a little bit about that.
It's not going to look like school and taste like school and smell like school. It's going to be fun, and they will learn at the same time, which is what summer needs to be about. You want to keep learning, but you want to have fun and be able to relax a little bit. And for all the kids that are in the enrichment program, they will have that academic focus in the morning. So we really need to make sure that the enrichment activities are engaging. But it's all because of our grade level reading. The more we understand how important those early years are, we really truly believe that that's the way we're going to impact poverty and generational cycles of poverty if we really hit the education part. And the food component that's married to that is, you know, if your tummy's hungry during the day, you don't function as well, you don't perform as well. So we want to make sure that children are exposed to nutritious meals throughout the summer. With the across the county, the free reduced lunch rate is 25%. And knowing that one out of four children might be on the free and reduced lunch program, we want to make sure that the meals that they got during the school year are duplicated in the summer so that they're not going without those nutritious meals in the summertime.
So the children who are selected for this program or the children who voluntarily decide, whose families decide to send them, it's based on educational need?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so the school district has a formula that they use to invite different families from the elementary and the middle school to come. We're so excited that the school district has expanded their program, their summer academic program, from the 3 weeks to 6 weeks. That's fantastic. And they've been a great partner in this whole program, and we're very excited to be working so closely with them.
Well, it sounds like your organization is really being an advocate in the community, not just a partner. I mean, to expand, to get the school district to expand their programming and so forth.
Well, we hope we had a little bit of influence in that. I think the school, the educators know how important summer learning is, and they know when the kids come back in the fall that they've experienced that summer learning loss. And that just makes it harder for everybody in the classroom, not just for that one student. We're hoping that by educating those kids and keeping them engaged during the summertime, that everybody will benefit in the fall when they come back to school.
Well, along the lines of advocacy, you know, I've often got the impression that maybe Ames residents weren't quite as aware of the extent of poverty in our community as you indicate. I mean, one in four children is on free or reduced lunch, which
mm-hmm.
That's, you know, one in four kids are basically coming from a position of poverty. That's a pretty serious number that we need to think about in all of our planning.
Absolutely. Well, and that 25% that I quoted is kind of countywide. If you look at individual elementary buildings in Ames, 3 out of 5 of the elementary schools are at 40% or above for the free and reduced lunch. So it's even greater in different buildings. And I can say that about different elementary schools across the county. The average is the 25%. And that's what happened in 2011, when we looked at the free and reduced lunch rate. At that time, Cape Mitchell was over 40%, and it was one of those realizations that, how did this happen in Ames, Iowa? How did the number grow so quickly? So that's why we really formed the Hunger Collaborations, to start looking at what we can do as a community. One of the things that we did back then was start the backpack program. And on Fridays during the school year, Cape Mitchell students, only 24, because we don't have the resources to do everyone that needs it, but 24 of the children then took a backpack full of food home on Fridays, and that backpack was intended to feed that one student. So that program has grown. We now have 4 elementary schools in Ames. We have both Ballard Elementaries. We have Nevada Central Elementary, all part of the backpack program, and that's through the Food Bank of Iowa. So once again, another partner that we've partnered with to make this happen.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jean. I know that you're fairly new to the leadership of United Way.
Well, actually, on Monday, I'll celebrate 4 years, so I guess I can't call myself the new kid on the block. I've been in Ames since 1986. I started with Human Services when I first graduated from college and worked for a community action agency in Dubuque, and then took the job at Youth and Shelter Services. My background is fundraising and marketing. It's not social work, and I often tell folks when I would write grants that I was doing the easy part. They were doing the hard part by having to actually implement the program. So I've been in Ames since 1986, and I feel very fortunate to have accepted this position and been offered this position. I love my job. I love going to work every day and making a difference in people's lives in any way we can. I just think it's the thing that you need to do.
Yeah, United Way is typically associated, at least in my mind, I think only of the fundraising program in the fall, where United Way kind of steers the fundraising for the majority of our nonprofits in the community. And this is something completely separate. This is a new, you're developing programs
right,
as well
right.
now.
Well, United Way has a long history of raising the funds in a community to turn them over to programs that provide human service, address human service needs, and that has been our focus. We still do that. United Ways across the country are really looking at how can they be better conveners of partners to make sure that we are doing more than just providing services. We are really actually addressing issues. We focus on the building blocks to make a good life for individuals, and that's education, income, and health. And so that's why grade level reading and food and everything like that falls into those pillars that we're focusing on. Certainly the campaign is important, and it allows us to do what we want to do and what we think we need to do in the community, but really we're a lot more than that. We really are looking at the issues, and we're trying to figure out long-term solutions to the problems that our community faces, and we're not afraid to tackle some of the bigger issues, and we're not afraid to ask partners to join us to tackle those issues. So that's pretty much my job. Full-time. And so people always ask me after the campaign, oh, it's slowed down at United Way, hasn't it? And I'm like, no, not really. We really are an organization that works full force ahead 365 days a year. I guess we do get vacations.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, once you figure this program out and it's running smoothly, we'll get you to tackle the problem of housing in Story County.
No, yeah, that is, that it definitely is falls into the what we need to be
basic
working on.
Needs.
Yep, basic needs.
Jean, you've been really delightful to speak with. It's been very nice hearing a little bit more about the larger context of this program.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't say volunteer opportunities are available. If you haven't been on our volunteer website, just simply call our office, 515-268 5142, and we will, everybody that answers the phone at United Way would log you in somewhere, and we would find a suitable space for you to volunteer.
That was Jean Cressy, Director of United Way, and you are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts, together with Tom Beal. You might have heard one other voice in that interview. That was Jerry Bug. She is from YSS, the Community Youth and Family Development Director, which means that she directs all the prevention programs at YSS. And Jerry Bug is in charge of the food service arrangements. Jean mentioned that YSS had that contract, and so Jerry has been trying to figure out who is going to provide the food for the kids, the breakfast, the lunch, and the snacks. And when she was here on Friday, things weren't quite so clear. She was still working on that. It's a challenging thing to be asking a food service provider for 200 kids and so on. But I understand that part, that little wrinkle has been smoothed out, and there will be food for the kids. Jean really wanted to thank also the Amos Rotary Club, which provided a $7,500 grant to help things move along.
You know, that was an extraordinary interview. For me, I thought I knew a lot about United Way, and yet it turns out that it's doing so much more than just simply collecting money and giving it to various groups. I mean, this is a spectacular program, and I just have to shake my head and wonder, how can a city as affluent as Ames and this portion of the county and of the state still have so many children in need? It's amazing.
Yes, it is.
And the fact that children cannot learn when they're hungry. And the thing that I also heard earlier, you know, the children eat lunch at school, and so they look forward, I think, to going to school because they know they'll have something to eat. And then the summer comes, and months or weeks, several weeks with no program. And this is such a spectacular program, not only because it helps the children develop their reading skills, so important to their future, but they get to have something to eat as well.
Yes. And, you know, I was thinking of the parents of these children are most likely working very hard, you know, probably piecing together a bunch of part-time jobs, and might not always be home during the summer for these kids to have supervision. So in so many ways, this program is really providing such a vital service for people in our community. Well, we have been joined by Leslie Kohlhaus, who is the one of the VISTA volunteers. That she was in the first tier of VISTA volunteers that Jean Cressy mentioned. She's been on the case probably the longest of everyone. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thank you.
And we also have Diana Schmidt. She is a retired teacher who's been working very hard with Raising Readers, and she's developing the third and fourth grade curriculum for that enrichment program. So we're going to be talking a little bit about kind of the exciting things the kids are going to be learning and experiencing in a bit. So, Leslie, you have been coordinating volunteers for this program. Originally, I think I heard that you guys needed 70 volunteers per day. That kind of got scaled down then to 40 volunteers, from what I understand. Have you found those 40 volunteers it's 6 weeks, and each week is 4 days, Monday mm-hmm. through Thursday. So how's it going?
So we are doing better in terms of volunteer numbers, and we've really seen a lot of improvement over the last 2 weeks when we've done that final poll, you know, really trying to get volunteers into those positions. In terms of June, we still do have a few positions open, working with the enrichment program. Almost all of our food positions have been filled, which is really fabulous. We've been happy that the community stepped up in that sense, and we do have majority of our enrichment positions filled as well, but we still have a couple of those assistant roles and a couple of those lead facilitator roles as well, and that would be the direct work with the kids, kind of implementing those fun activities. And what's nice about it is that we have a lot of flexibility with who can volunteer. We can work with both adults and youth, and there's kind of a wide range of volunteering opportunities in terms of the amount of hours or the amount of days that you want to commit to. So we're really hoping that that helps those last couple people kind of get in those positions for us, at least in June, so we can really have that solid. In terms of July, we still do have a lot of spaces open for both the food program and the enrichment program. Of course, we'd like to think that people are going to come in June and love the program so much that they're going to be so excited to come back in July. And they did see that a lot in Nevada, so we're really hoping that happens here as well. But if you are looking to have a really good opportunity to volunteer, this would be a nice program to sign up for. And we do have all the spaces open in July. So,
Lisa, can I ask you a kind of a practical question?
Yes.
If I wanted to volunteer, what time would I have to show up? And how long would I be there during the day? And do I get lunch, too? And things like that.
Yeah. So, what really is nice about that is that flexibility that I was talking about. So, depends what meal you're volunteering with if you're doing the food program. For breakfast, it's a shorter commitment. I think it's about an hour. And specific times like that are listed online, and I can give the website for that.
Since you mentioned the website, would you repeat it right now? What is it?
Yeah, so you can get a link to the website through the Volunteer Center of Story County website. On their front page, they have a link to our flyer, which kind of explains in brief what our programs are about, and then links you to a volunteer spot page where you can log in with your email, and you can see all of the positions that are open and sign up for them directly on the website there. So,
and one more question, mm-hmm. and that is, so I want to volunteer, what do I get out of it?
I think this really is a neat program in that sense that you're giving so much to these kids, you know, and it's not a huge time commitment in a lot of the senses. But I think it'll be really interesting for community members to come in and kind of see the programs and how AIMS has pulled together to help the youth. And so I think you meet a lot of really cool people. And I definitely think it's an experience knowing that you're helping the younger population. And I feel like a lot of times over the summer that kind of gets neglected a little bit. So,
all right. So what kind of people have been volunteering? Can you characterize them or?
So we really have a broad range of anyone, and I think that comes from the fact that we're accepting not only adults but also youth as well. And so it's open to honestly everyone. We have families coming that are coming together, you know, with some of their younger kids to serve some of the meals, which is really great. Kind of leaves that opportunity for families to volunteer together. As well as we have people who are coming in to do one singular day. They might serve breakfast on one day during the month. And we also have people who are coming in routinely who say, I want to be there every Monday, Wednesday, the whole program. So that goes back to that flexibility as well in terms of commitment to the program and what you really have time for. We know people are really busy over the summer, so we wanted to leave that flexibility up.
I'm forced to ask, how young is the youngest person and how old is the oldest person who's been volunteering for this program, would you guess?
So the youngest person, I would say we do have a family, I guess, that's coming in with an 8 and a 10-year-old. We would not probably go with 8 and 10-year-olds to come in on their own, but we do have some parents who are willing to bring in their kids and really want to volunteer as a family. But otherwise, we're kind of trying to stick more toward that 13 age and above. And then in terms of oldest, I do believe we had someone who was 85 who called the other day. And
wow.
Wanted to volunteer with one of our programs.
I think
so that's really
so wonderful.
Cool.
And I think a lot of older people, I hate to use the O word, but a lot of older people, I think, kind of get energized when they're around young people.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great connection to make as well. We really need some of those relationships between the older and the younger generations.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the enrichment program. Diana, I was very attracted to it because it used the acronym STEAM, and that just sounded exciting.
Definitely. Well, the well-known term, and especially through the state of Iowa right now, is STEM, but we decided to add an A to the STEM to make it STEAM, and I personally like to add an R to it and make it STREAM, but we've kind of coined the idea that we're using STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, then we're inserting the arts, which includes literacy and mathematics. So we're rolling all of those things into one big program.
And I know that you are doing this through a lot of collaboration with people in the community. We have so many intellectual resources here, and you are taking advantage of them.
Definitely. It is just such a mecca of opportunities that we have in Ames that sometimes don't get tapped. So I'm working specifically with the third and fourth graders. We'll have about 46 students. And we are going to partner with Ryman Gardens. They are coming to the middle school five of the six weeks, one time a week. And then we will tour Ryman Gardens also. And then we have the National Animal Disease Lab. We have scientists, three scientists coming every week to work with the kids on different kinds of science activities, ranging from density to DNA extraction to germ busters, where the kids get to see, actually, all after they wash their hands, they're going to see how contaminated they still are. So we will have a plethora of activities. If you think about it, 6 weeks times three scientists, that's 18 different topics that they will be covering. We also have scientists from Iowa State working with us, which will be excellent because we are working on developing a pre- and post-assessment for STEAM, which will be very interesting to see. So we have someone from the research park that's going to help us develop an assessment. We are collaborating with the Ames Public Library, and the library has arranged to have a program every single week for the students, and we're inviting community to come in and join us. So every Wednesday from 1 to 1:45, any third and fourth graders from the community that aren't involved in the program can come to the Ames Middle School auditorium, and the parents need to accompany the students. But we have storytellers, jesters, magicians, scientists, and they all are going to emphasize literacy. And then we're going to do something special on Thursdays called a pizza-a-thon. So we're going to look at where the ingredients in pizzas originate from and trace those back to their roots and study soil and work with the ag farm at ISU. I have different speakers coming in. The young lady, Katie Joyner, who won the egg competition from the high school because of her creativity with coming up with a different egg dish, is going to come because we want to look at how we can be creative with pizzas. And then the students will divide up into groups and they get to create their own healthy, nutritious pizza. So, and they'll get to bake it because the family and consumer scientist head person is going to come in and help us. And there are eight kitchens at the middle school. So I think it'll be a very empowering experience for the kids.
I think the challenge will be, of course, to get them to eat anything after you show how much bacteria are still in their hands after that little test.
They'll probably forget that really fast.
Yeah, they get hungry. They don't care. And anyway, every kid has to eat a pack of dirt and, anyway in their lifetime, yeah.
It's just so exciting, all the things that you've put together. And you've been working on this for a while then.
Definitely. We started working with Ryman Gardens almost a year ago. So this is just evolving.
Will the kids be allowed to go through the butterfly area there?
Yes,
oh, that'll
definitely.
Be something. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
And they're going to get a little bit of physical exercise, I hear, too.
Definitely.
Well, what is the physical exercise? I'm curious to know about that.
We call it physical literacy. And we have a PE teacher that's going to be helping and soccer club. And Greta has said that she would do yoga and modern dance. We want to expose the kids to some different kinds of activities that maybe they wouldn't have in their regular PE classes at school.
Wow. It sounds like a spectacular program.
You want to come?
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, you said that young people who are not enrolled in the program can come over that kind of midday, kind of lunch time event at the middle school auditorium. And I said, well, I'm just wondering how young you have to be to come to that. In other words,
you would be invited.
Would I be old enough to go or young
of
enough?
Of course. And I might add then that the library also has speakers lined up for kindergarten through second graders on Thursdays from 1 to 1:45. So anyone from the community that would fit in that age range and above, if we have some adults that want to experience this, I'm sure we would welcome them with open arms.
I will toss in quick, if you really want to experience the program, you could come volunteer.
And there's also a 5 through 8. We've mentioned K through 2, 3 and 4th graders, and then the 5 through 8 kids. They're participating in a curriculum that's been developed by YSS, right?
Yep, that's correct. They are working with the YSS team right now, and they've developed the entire program, and they've done a lot of work with youth, so that's been a really amazing opportunity for us to be able to partner with them and have them create that program for them. And I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know they're doing something based off of the wellness wheel, so it covers things like emotional, social, physical health, and several other realms as well. But
it's called Be the Change, right?
Well, it started, I believe, from a segment that they had called Be the Change Camp, but I think it's developed a lot from that as well and kind of developed into its own program, which is really cool since it's starting its new thing with this partnership. So,
yeah, you just can't stop the creativity of our community from moving forward and developing new stuff. All right. And the kids, I understand, are going to be bused by the school district to get to the programs.
Yep, that's correct. The school district has been really awesome in this collaboration. They'll be busing the kids to and from the school in the morning and the afternoon, as well as any of the kids that are leaving in between the segment after lunch as well. So,
Leslie, can you say, are all of the AmeriCorps volunteers from this area, or are they coming in from elsewhere?
Actually, we have been lucky to have a lot of local people be our AmeriCorps volunteers. So Judy was already living here in Ames and has been a long time. I had gone to school at Iowa State here, and that's how I got my connection in. And the other four ladies as well are from the local area, and they've gone away to school and come back, which is really cool to see that they want to be a part of our community again. So,
you know, that's so typical of Iowans, though. It's so typical of people going away, experiencing life elsewhere, and then wanting to come back to Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're running out of time, but I would like both of you to reflect on how this program has developed over time. I know that, Leslie, you've been with the program sort of since February as the VISTA volunteer. And, Diana, it's hard to say when your involvement began, because as a member of Raising Readers, a very active volunteer in that organization, you've been part of the sort of evolution of thought at United Way and in the community about the goals for our children and so on. So we'll start with Leslie and maybe follow up with Diana.
I would say, and this has probably started before I even came in on February, but I would say one of those first big kind of steps that was made was that collaboration and partnership with Ames Community School District. And that's a really awesome opportunity that they allowed us to come in on. So we love partnering with them, and they've done a lot in terms of expanding that original program from 3 weeks to 6 weeks. That was a huge milestone and step. And then they've really stepped up in terms of the food program and the transportation. So, I mean, that was one of the really cool steps, I would say. And I that started way before I was here even. So,
okay.
I would say around 3 years ago or so, Raising Readers got together with United Way and other partners in the community, and we formed something called Ames Reads. And it's very powerful because we have the Volunteer Center, Iowa State University, the Ames Public Library, Heartland, AEA. I know I'm forgetting some, and I apologize for the ones that I am forgetting here, but we've all come together, and we're part of something called the National Campaign for Grade Level Reading. So Ames was one of the original charter members of this organization, and we have three main emphases. One is school readiness, so when kids get to kindergarten, they're ready to learn. One is school attendance. We want kids being in school every day, unless, of course, they're sick. And the other is looking at the summer learning loss. And so that's what all of this is that we're talking about today. But one of the overall goals, then, is that we have kids reading proficiently by the end of third grade.
Okay. And I know everyone involved in this program is very committed to seeing this year be a success so that there can be future years of this program.
And we really do need the community to step up then as well. They filled a lot of those volunteer positions, and we love that our community members are a big part of the program and can help it be a success this year.
Okay. Well, thank you both for coming in and explaining more about the program. It's kind of complex, but I think we've gotten a good idea here about what's going to be happening. All right, so you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've listened to Jean Cressy, the director of United Way of Story County, and then been joined by Leslie Kohlhaus, a VISTA volunteer for the Summer Learning Program, and Diana Schmidt of Raising Readers and of this program.
Well, we've been your hosts, Tom Beal and Greta Anderson. Becca Brown engineered the show. This program will be posted on our website, khoifm.org, with all the relevant contact information by the end of the day today. If you like the show, tell your friends. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a program. We invite you to get involved here at the station. Of course, your participation as a listener is what makes KHOI matter. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Revolution.